Imam Al-Amin, welcome to A Closer Look. Good to have you.
Thank you, Dennis. I'm so glad to be with you.
When you first heard of the attack at Charlie Hebdo and the offices there and the subsequent events in Paris, did you have a feeling almost of deja vu because this is not the first time something like this has happened? And immediately people start saying, okay, where are the leaders of the Islamic community here? Was that the first thought that went through your head, though?
Well, yeah, the first thought when any of these types of atrocities occur and that people doing them claim to be Muslim or identify it with as if it's an Islamic act, it really does sadden my heart. And it's because Islam has nothing to do with that. But at the same time, people want Muslim leaders and Muslim personalities to come out and speak about it. And it's in speaking about it, it's a horrendous act. And there's no way I can identify with it as a person or as a Muslim. And then to always be asked to speak about it at the same time lets me know that the general public is somewhat in the dark about what the faith and what the religion is really about.
That's where I was going, because the folks who do this kind of thing often cite the Quran or often cite something, and that may be one reason why they ask people who are leaders in the community here to speak, because they're saying, okay, so what does the faith really say?
Right. Well, first of all, people have to understand that the only justification from an Islamic standpoint of murder is another murder, and only if you are positive and it's proven, it's clear. But there's no justification for killing anyone or murdering anyone just because of what you think is blasphemy or what you think is some type of criminal act, per se. So there's no way of justifying that. But I think one of the problems, Dennis, is that we have engaged in all of these activities as a war, and so we really have convinced some of these people that they are soldiers of a particular cause or whatever, when really they are just criminals, and oftentimes very ignorant of what their faith is, and really ignorant of what the potential of human life should be about, or what we should be striving for. So I think we have created the space for folks to go to these extremes. And I really believe that if we dealt with all of them as criminals, it would put them in the right context.
In Christianity, there has been the debate for centuries over the just war.
Mm.
Internally, is there anything similar happening in Islam about, okay, when is violent action justified?
Well, it's clear. In the Quran, it says you have the right for an eye for an eye, tooth for a tooth. But the next verse says, but it's best to forgive. Okay. And it says that that God has allowed one people to check another people, and really to check anyone who's gone to an extreme or who's oppressing. And if that wasn't allowed, the Quran actually says there would not be left mosque, churches, synagogues, or monasteries where the name of God is commemorated in abundant measure. So really, from a Quranic standpoint, Muslims are obligated to protect not only freedom of religion and freedom of speech, but protect mosques, synagogues, churches, and monasteries. And so we're actually seeing people going in the opposite direction of that, which is really clearly against, for a Muslim to go against that is clearly un-Islamic.
So where does the justification come from? Does it come from anything that may have been said one way, either by the Prophet or in the Quran, and then is taken another way?
Let me give a little something else on the previous question, and then I can go to that. The Quranic message is during the Prophet's life, for the first he received revelation for 23 years. The first 13 years, he basically was a pacifist. And then after he moved out of Mecca into Medina and the Meccans came to attack him, he was given the revelation, fight with those who fight with you. But behind that revelation is the descriptions of how to fight, and that if you only fight until the people stop fighting, and that if someone surrenders, you must stop. In this particular case, where it's really strange where these young men get these ideas. In Islam, we don't picture God. We make no images of God. We make no images of the prophets, but it's a different reason for the prophets. Mainly, we don't make any images, physical images of the prophets, so that people will concentrate on their message, their word, and their life, and not their ethnicity or their race. So it is really no Islamic justification for them. But the bottom line is that even if they're upset about the caricatures and all of this, you can't go and murder people just because they drew something that you don't agree with. You can't go and murder people just because they are doing something that you call blasphemous. The Quran doesn't say blasphemy is the punishment for it is death or anything. And so they have gotten caught up into this very, very narrow and strange concept that they actually end up being more blasphemous of the prophet than the people who drew the cartoons.
So the question then is, what is it about a caricature of the prophet that makes so many people so angry?
Well, first of all, we don't make images of Prophet Muhammad, you know, as Muslims, but we do understand that other people don't quite get that, don't quite understand that. But you don't have to be an educated Muslim, just have to be a thinking Muslim to understand that if someone draws a caricature of the prophet, that's not Prophet Muhammad. That's not him. And so we always put the emphasis on what his character was. How did he behave? How did he act? And clearly, what these three young men did has nothing to do with Prophet Muhammad's character, and therefore they have deformed and discredited and abused his image more so than these caricatures.
Can you see, though, why someone would describe someone as Islamist terrorist simply by as identifying them as someone who believes that he or she is fighting for the faith, even if they're not trying to say, oh, because they're a Muslim, they're a terrorist. They're saying this person believes they are fighting for the faith, and the faith is their motivation.
Yeah, but if you were to go to any of these countries, including Yemen, Pakistan, Syria, any of these countries, Iraq, and you'd ask the policeman, why is he a policeman? Because this is part of his faith. This is what he, why, if you're a military man, why are you a soldier? Because this is part of my faith. I'm obligated to protect my country. I'm obligated to protect the innocent and protect the weak. I'm a Muslim, and so this is why I do this. So the majority of people that they are fighting against would also claim that they are fighting on behalf, they're defending their faith and their way of life.
Does it bother you when you hear the questions about, okay, we need to hear from this or that Muslim leader in this country as if one person could speak for the entire community? And yet, on the other hand, do you also see it as an opportunity?
Well, it's not an opportunity that I ever look forward to. And really, in the Muslim world, there's no one person that can speak for the whole Muslim world. And people have to understand that we are quite different from, say, the Catholic Church. We don't have a pope. Country by country may have a top religious figure, but for the Muslim world, there is no such one figure. And so I understand people wanting to hear a rational perspective or the moderate perspective. All you have to do now is go up on the internet and just Google any of the Muslim papers and periodicals and organizations here in the U.S. and in other places, and you see they all come out against these atrocities. And the moderate Muslims per se, and I don't even call them moderate Muslims, I just call them the average Muslim or the sane Muslim or the rational Muslim, they're always speaking against these horrendous events. And it's really just those who have given themselves to hurt and to hate and to extremes that most of our media thinks are newsworthy.
Is it really a process, though, as opposed to a single isolated set of stories? Because in the aftermath of an attack, there's obviously emotion. There's obviously, let's find who did this. Oh, they were members of this, thus, and so. But isn't it also a process that as it goes along, as we have a chance to have conversations like this, that there's more perspective?
Yeah, well, definitely is a process. And we have to keep in mind that other people, other Muslim people, have these same stories in their town, in their home. So Pakistan, if you pull up their media, often you get that they had a drone attack, and it was at a wedding party or was at a family gathering. 12 people killed, 20 people killed. So we only see it from our standpoint of what we can identify with, but we have these atrocities happening in other parts of the world when, and their dilemma is they can't identify any individual, and so they begin to identify us as a country. They begin to identify where the drone came from. We're living in a very, very difficult time, but as you are saying, as we press through it, as we process through it, we can find some benefits, and the benefits ought to outweigh these hurts and these sorrows that we're going through. Quran says, verily, with every difficulty, there is relief. So keep striving, keep pushing for the better. Compete towards all that is good, and wherever you are, God will bring you together.
Imam Pleyman T. Al-Amin, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thank you.